Welcome back to Legally Uncensored. I'm your host, Demetria Graves, a licensed family law attorney based in California. Our podcast is your go-to source for the essential tools and knowledge needed to navigate the complex world of family law. We take pride in engaging in uncensored conversations and eliminating challenging subjects, aiming to equip you with insights that contribute to healthier future relationships and proactive strategies. In this season, we are diving into the unspoken challenges that often arise in divorce. Our focus is on the ways difficult behaviors such as narcissism can further complicate and escalate the already intricate process of divorce. To help us unravel this topic, we have the privilege of introducing Tamar Gottlieb, a seasoned professional counselor specializing in coaching individuals through the divorce journey. Tamar will be sharing her expertise on parenting during and after divorce, the role of power dynamics, and the vital importance of assembling a reliable support team. Please join me in welcoming Tamar Gottlieb to Legally Uncensored. So Tamar, thank you so much for being here. We are so thrilled to have you today. So thank you. Can you please let our listeners know who you are and kind of what you do and some insights into your background?
Thank you so much for having me, Demetria. I am really excited to be here. I love your podcast. My background is I started off as a clinical social worker, then later moved into coaching. I work with families, individuals, and couples. More recently, I have worked primarily with a lot of families going through divorce. I started off working with children, and now I work with a lot of parents helping to guide them through the divorce.
So how do people know the difference, or what is the difference between a divorce coach and a therapist?
That is a really good question. Therapy usually focuses more on the mental health, mental illness aspect of things, and focuses a lot on the past. And coaching focuses on moving forward in the future. Also, just in terms of professional development, therapists are licensed mental health providers in the state that they're in, and coaches serve under the auspices of the coaching accreditation.
Awesome. So have you seen in your experience that someone might have a divorce coach and a therapist during the divorce process?
Yes. What I've seen is really helpful, actually, is different supports for different parts of the family. So you might have a counselor or a coach or a therapist who is working with you as the family. That's perhaps either if you're still in a marriage or if you're in the process of divorce, that would usually be on focusing to help the children and the parenting aspect of things. Also, people might have individual counselors or coaches to help support them. In couples counseling, sometimes the counselor will work with the individuals also individually, but usually people have a couples counselor and then individual counselors as well. So it's really whether the whole system of the family is the focus in being treated or the individual. Because just like with having your own attorney, having your own individual counselor or coach can be extremely beneficial if you're going through divorce or just in life, whatever relationship status you're in.
Right. And you and I have talked about this before. I say very early on, I handled the business of divorce, right? But emotions are still so very high. So how do you even begin to assist people in kind of dealing with their feelings of what they are experiencing? One, and then two, you add on an extra layer of children. Let's first start with how do you pull that all in to start with and then help out the children?
Absolutely. And I love that you say the business of divorcing or of ending the marriage. And I use that language with clients as well, because marriage or coupling, that's one business. Parenting is another business. And if you are parents, you might be great in the relationship and not work so well in the parenting. You might be great parenting partners and not work so well in the relationship, but they're completely different businesses. And then the feelings part and how do I myself, me, feel, that's a separate piece to sort of the business end of things. And that's why I really encourage people, whether they're in the process of divorce or they're still married, to have some individual support, whether it's counseling or coaching. And I'll say more about that after. And to have other support that's treating the business end. And I often talk to people about if you were starting a business with somebody, you would have a board of directors and you'd have a lot of advisors, right? You wouldn't just be running it on your own. You need that also in the parenting business or in the marriage business. So what I specifically talk to people about, I am here to support your mental health, your well-being, the feelings part of it. That's who I am. Your lawyer is there to help you navigate the legal system in the business end of things. That's what they can help you with. Do not use your attorney to try and support your emotional needs because that's not their job. It's not their expertise. And it's really not a good use of their time and your time with them. So I find it works really well for people when they have both an attorney and then somebody, a coach, counselor, a therapist, who's supporting them in the emotional well-being side of things.
I think it's imperative. And I say this all the time. Yeah, I'm going to listen to you tell me the sob story, but I'm charging you by the hour. And I don't have the tools that Tamar might have to kind of coach you through what you're experiencing emotionally. And I don't even try to start because I don't have the tools to do that. I try to soothe when I can, but you're right. It is not a great use of my time. But then sometimes I have people say, I can't afford to pay for an attorney and a counselor and a divorce coach. What are some of the costs look like if someone has to hire or should hire a coach and or a counselor?
Coaching or counseling, it varies depending on where you are. Now that also there's so much telehealth, there's a lot more options available. And I was doing telehealth with coaching way before COVID. But I believe so strongly in that because it provides convenience for people. And I think it makes it more accessible, just having support more accessible for people. But I hear that from a lot of people, and I absolutely understand it. You don't need to have, but I highly recommend that you have an attorney who really, really knows what they're doing and has your back in the legal side of things, that they really understand that. And you need to put your money there. In terms of a coach or a therapist, what I was going to say before also is I really encourage people to trust your gut, regardless of what degree somebody has or certification or licensing, or how many books they've published, or what everyone says, go with your gut because it's really important that you connect with the person, not necessarily that you love what they're saying, but that you feel seen and heard by them and that they really get it. And especially in divorce, parenting, and relationships, that they really are seasons then enough to be able to see the whole picture and understand the other players in it. And hopefully to be able to help you see where you are in this to guide you. In terms of cost, there are a lot of options. You can go privately. A lot of people have sliding scales. There's, because of COVID now, there are so many telehealth options, which can be really, really affordable. And also, depending on your insurance, you can go through your insurance, not usually for coaching, but for a lot of other counseling and support services. And even with that, I say try out a lot of people. You can always do a consult with somebody and look for someone who feels like a good fit for you. If you feel like it just doesn't feel good or the person doesn't get you, they're not the right person for you.
Right. I wish there was actually a requirement before divorce that you had to speak to someone first, a therapist, a coach, or someone, because I think bringing in those emotions before you start the business of divorce can really, really help the business side of things. Because I think a lot of times in the beginning, people are so wrapped up in how they feel that they can't really see the business aspects and kind of evaluate what they need and how this process is going to go. One of my other big focuses is children. because I think children are often forgotten in the process, at least in the beginning. Do you have children that have divorce coaches, or is that something you recommend?
I often recommend therapy or coaching. It's usually a therapist for children. I have also worked in a variety of programs where there are workshops that are for the whole family. And there's usually a parenting workshop and then a child workshop. And that can often be really beneficial if there's groups or workshops for children, because also depending on the child's age, it's addressing the needs and the mental health and the developmental stage of the child. Also, there's a benefit for children for being with a group of other children who are going through this and normalizing it. Because for children who are going through divorce or separation, there's so much that can be taking on the blame, or what did I do wrong? Or even if we tell them mommy and daddy love me and they know that, there's still a huge benefit for children in normalizing it. Also for parents, either people who don't have children, groups can also be helpful. But parenting workshops can be really, really helpful for parents in the same way that they can hear from other parents, but that there's also a skilled facilitator who's giving some direction and some information about what the developmental needs are of children in general. And sometimes that can be easier for people to relate to than just having it be one-on-one.
Right. That's a great point, because sometimes kids like to see, oh, wow, other kids are experiencing what I'm experiencing. And I think it softens the blow a little bit. So we're going to get dark a little bit, Tamar, because this season of the podcast, we're talking about different things that amplify the divorce experience. And one, from what I've seen, are toxic relationships. And we talk a lot these days about narcissism. So I would like to hear from you, because we've already discussed how hard divorce already is on its own. How are toxic relationships different than the average divorce? And kind of how do you deal with that and encompass that when you're coaching?
Toxic relationships are very challenging. One, because it's not always obvious. It may be obvious to people outside of the relationship. A lot of times what happens when a toxic relationship ends or somebody's leaving a partner, other people around them will say, oh, thank goodness. I've seen this from the beginning. This wasn't good. This was controlling. You weren't being yourself. You were being isolated. But sometimes it is really, really hard to see it when you are inside of it. And what I really encourage people to do when they come to me and I'm getting the feeling that there's some toxicity going on in their life is to lean into, how do you feel? How do you feel when you are with this person? And often people who are in toxic relationships can't even identify that. It's very, very difficult to identify that. So sometimes I'll start with, let's practice just noticing how you feel with various people. How do you feel when you go get your coffee and you're interacting with that barista? Did that feel like it lifted you up, or did that feel negative? How did you feel when you dropped your kids off at school and you had that interaction with the person who walked by, or the headmaster, or whatever? Just start noticing. Even, do you feel up or do you feel down? Because usually in a toxic relationship, one person is being drained, but it is very difficult to identify that feeling. That can often be because of their upbringing and their childhood, but that is one of the things that I start with zeroing in with people.
That's very interesting you say that. And then as some mothers are so entrenched of taking care of kids, taking care of the house, going to work, taking care of the household. How do you get someone like that? And sometimes that's dads as well. How do you get them to understand and or separate the busyness of it all versus how they actually feel?
That is such a good point. And I would say, how do you feel or what do you want is sometimes the hardest question for people to answer. That's usually what I lead with. And it's usually women, and it's often moms who are just jaw on the floor. I have absolutely no idea. We'll break it down. I'll either start really big with, if you could wave a magic wand, what would you want to be different? Or what would you start high in the sky? What would you like? Or I'll start really small. What if you could have anything you wanted for dinner tonight, what would it be? And usually the conversation goes, well, okay, I have to make this for my husband and my kids will eat this. And then one is allergic and oh my gosh, I have to go to the grocery store. Okay. If you could have anything you want, what do you want? And tuning into what do I want and how do I feel is usually the hardest part for people. So you ask, how do you get away from the busyness? I'll have people or I'll suggest to people to just start practicing. If you can go into a bookstore, now everything's Amazon, but if you can go into a bookstore, what section would you like to browse in? Even if you're in the bookstore with your kids. Okay, you do the children's section. Now, what section draws you? Would you want to go hang out in sci-fi or are you kind of more interested in mystery? Not what should you do, what do you want? And I just have them start paying attention to, I like that, I didn't like that. I like this type of coffee that they had at my job. Ooh, I didn't like that type of coffee. Because people are often not used to even tuning into, what do I want? And what do I like? Let alone, how do I feel?
That's so interesting because as soon as you said that, I said to myself, I don't have time. I don't know. Like this morning, I was up, I went to the store, I came back, I started lunch, then I came, I had a court hearing, then I'm sitting here with you. So it's like some people feel they just don't have the time. But to your point, I think it's extremely important to know or to sometimes breathe and stop and start thinking about what's important and stop being just in the wheel of life and not really understanding what you need and what you want. To all of us running around like chickens with no heads, it's really important to start identifying that. And I think I'm going to do that too, Tamar. I think that's a really, really important lesson. But another issue I've seen with toxic relationships, and some people don't even know that they are extremely codependent with their partner. And if you've been in that cycle for 16 years or 10 years or whatever it is, how do you start working through that?
Exactly. That is a perfect lead-in, what we were just talking about, because a lot of codependency is looking to somebody else to regulate myself. So I don't know how I feel. I'm going to scan you to see, how do you feel? Oh, Dimitri is in a good mood. Okay, I can relax. Ooh, Dimitri seems kind of tense. I'd better be prepared. I feel like I'm walking on eggshells and it's going to change my behavior. I'm not going to bring up this conflict or this potentially conflictual conversation with Demetria right now because she's looking a little tense. I'm worried that's going to set her off. It's all about me looking to you and me hoping to regulate you by my behavior in order to regulate my feelings, if that makes sense. So I'm doing my whole dance of life around how I think I'm going to make my partner feel, whether it's in divorce or not in divorce. And the flip side of that is the partner is probably blaming me and reinforcing that I have the power to regulate their feelings. So the partner is saying also things like, I couldn't get any work done because I was so busy taking care of you because you seemed sad. So I had to be so busy in my head taking care of you. So the partner often manipulates it. I'm actually taking care of you. I care about you so much, but I can't get anything done or I'm suffering or I'm the victim here. And it has to do with what you're doing. So there's a lot of blame on the person who's the codependent. So how do you get out of that? Again, it starts with the same place. Start practicing noticing, how do I feel separate from somebody else, which is a challenging one.
Right. I've heard someone say, and this really helped me, stay in your own frame. Like you're all in their frame and in their business. Get back in your own frame and start getting in your business. That was powerful for me. To get in my frame. Because a lot of us, like you said, I think we're trained in our society to look outward for our happiness instead of inward.
Yes. And especially women and young girls. And I'll even notice if I'm working with a group of middle school girls and I'll ask, is anyone hungry? Say I've brought a snack. Is anyone hungry? They will look to each other to see what other people are saying. They will not even notice how they feel inside because it's not about, gee, do I actually feel hungry? It's about, wait, what's socially acceptable? Is it okay? Is anyone else going to eat? Is the thing that we're being offered an okay thing to eat? Am I going to look that? Am I going to look this way or that way? And in a codependent relationship, especially if there's a narcissist involved, the narcissist is playing on that too. It's really a dance. Mm. So when you're saying stay in your own frame, it is like stepping out of the dance, which is really challenging when the other partner's still dancing.
Right. It's definitely a practice, right? And what's mind-boggling to me as we're going through all these different topics, all of this is happening before the business of the divorce process even begins. And so people are trying to come to my office without even considering all of these other things that they have to deal with before divorce.
Yes. And I think that one of the challenges is, like we said before, the legal part of divorce, which also depends on what state you're in, what country you're in, child custody, it varies depending on where you're in. That is completely separate from the emotional issues, either of divorce or, like you said, the issues that are going on pre-divorce. They're not going to suddenly go away.
One of the biggest things I've seen too, in toxic relationships and otherwise, and custody cases are just people in general, is the shame and or the blame people feel because their divorce is ending and the embarrassment. How do you deal with that on top of maybe the codependency and having someone identify that they have a toxic partner or they are the toxic partner? Mm-hmm. So now you have multiple levels, right? So you have just the emotional undertaking of going through a divorce, dealing with codependency, and now they feel embarrassed or shameful because of what they're experiencing.
Exactly. Shame is a huge factor that comes in. And that is one of the things that I think groups or workshops can be helpful with, because it normalizes it. It gives you other people to relate to. It's not so isolating, because one of the things that also happens in divorce, even when people have a strong support system, people inevitably, in my experience, clients feel alone. Even if they know other people who've gone through it, even if they have a support system around them, people generally feel isolated and this sense of failure, because it's set up as a failure. It's set up as, well, I guess you failed at the marriage, so now you're getting divorced, instead of this business of marriage is not working right now, so we're not going to do this anymore. But people feel failure. And also the shame and blame goes on to children. Children feel ashamed. Children feel like they might be embarrassed. They don't want to share it. At school, people know, but like, so what I really do for people is I help people call that out. And again, it's how do you feel? And where are you feeling wrong or shamed? If it's a toxic relationship, there's usually a blame factor, so that's contributing to it. Especially if it's a toxic relationship, the blame shame dance has probably or possibly been going on for a long time already. So now the new divorce is just the issue du jour, but the shame blame thing has been going on because one of the partners has probably consistently been blamed for everything that's wrong or blamed for the other partner's unhappiness. So on top of divorce, they're already going in preconditioned where there's somebody who does a lot of blaming, and there's often somebody who is not comfortable, but kind of used to and conditioned to taking on the shame. I'll see this repeatedly, you probably do, where there's one partner who will more easily take on sort of the responsibility of, yeah, it is my fault, when it's not, but they'll take on the responsibility for the other person's feelings.
So let me ask you, because this happens a lot and I'm starting to hear about it a lot more, on top of all of this that we talked about, then you add in the silent treatment that one partner has decided, I'm not even going to talk to you now. On top of all of this, that can be extremely stressful on top of everything else. How do you instruct parties to deal with the silent treatment?
The silent treatment is a really good example of manipulative behavior. It's just another way, not just, but it is another way to exert power and control. I mean, also, you'll see toddlers do that, right? Or teenagers. You see it at different developmental stages where I feel I have no control at all. So what I can do is just not talk to you. Eating and talking are things that people feel like they have control over, which is why also eating disorders come up when people feel like sometimes they have control issues. Again, what I tell people or how I work with people who are usually experiencing the other end of the silent, they're the victims of the silent treatment, is go back to what do you have control over? Because the whole difficulty in these relationships is, like you said, sort of getting out of your frame, getting into somebody else's business. What do you have control over? I don't have control over whether you're talking to me or not talking to me. I have control over what I'm doing. I have control over what I'm doing with the kids. I don't have control over whether you're going to talk to the kids. I don't have control over whether you're refusing to read a bedtime story to the kids. And another thing that I can do with children is I can name it. Naming is different from blaming. I can say something like, the other partner, daddy or mommy, isn't talking right now. They seem to be choosing not to talk. Okay, so we're going to talk. We're going to read our story. We're going to go along with what we're doing. I can take it out of that power play. And what I often say to people is, imagine that it's like a tug of war. Drop your end of the rope, because the other partner is trying to engage you in a tug of war. But if you drop the rope, you're not playing. It's the same as stepping out of the dance.
Right. We covered so much and it's so stressful, but I want people to understand that there are people there that can help and help you kind of peel off the layers of what they're experiencing. On the show, I also like to be a source of encouragement, right? So this is not the end of anyone's story. A lot of times it's a very beautiful beginning. We've talked about all the layers of toxicity that occurs to a person before the marriage, during the marriage, and then as they prepare for divorce. And a lot of times people are realizing these things for the first time when they come to see you or our therapist. Mm-hmm. So how can one start to rebuild their self-confidence? Because as we know, that takes a shot. Sometimes people have zero confidence. I've heard people tell me, wow, before this divorce, I was holding on to 20, 30 pounds that I just couldn't get rid of. And a lot of times it is the weight of the trauma they're dealing with. So how do you start to give the tools for someone to rebuild their life, rebuild their self-confidence after going through something so traumatic?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I know this can feel like doom, gloom, and darkness. And really, one, it's not a failure. It's just a chapter in your life. It's part of the journey. I know that can sound hokey, but really you wouldn't be who you are now if you hadn't gone through that. And if you look at it like this is the beginning of the rest of your life, you really do get to choose. And that's what I really love working with people on. It can seem scary and it can seem overwhelming because we're letting go of the familiar. Letting go, grief and loss, grief over what isn't going to be, grief over what we don't have anymore. But how about possibility? How about what would you like it to look like? And a lot of times I'll use the wave the magic wand there too, because people go to a place of not being comfortable with deserving. I don't deserve that. Who am I to think that I could have such a life? And really, such a life is usually grounded in something like, how about we start with what do you want? What do you like? What would it feel like for you to feel free? Usually there's a component of freedom in there. What would it feel like for you to feel more joy? What would it feel like for you to have more love in your life? It's usually those pieces that people are really craving. It's not usually like, I want $5 million. It's usually those.
The $5 million wouldn't hurt, but.
Yeah. And you get to have that. So now let's start creating your life so it's going in that direction. And you do deserve it. The self-confidence part you're talking about, that is usually connected to a feeling of not deserving. And there has often been a pattern of, for years, sort of taking care of other people and one's own joy or happiness or sense of self is dependent on how other people are doing. If you're a caretaker, usually if you're a female or a mom, it has been revolving around your kids, your spouse, your parents. And just like you said, well, wait, where am I in this? Who am I? That part is the hard part for people to get to. And it's scary, but it's scary because it's exciting.
Right. Would you say, in part of rebuilding the self-confidence, a big part of that is acceptance of this is happening? I might not want it to happen, but I'm accepting that this is how things are unfolding. Because sometimes people come in my office and they just can't believe it. And it takes them forever to just accept it. And accept it doesn't mean you're not going to grieve it. You're not upset. You're not hurt. But you accept that it's happening. And whatever happens on this journey is going to happen, but I accept it.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because acceptance, both on the legal side and the emotional side, is so key. And that's why I often refer people back to their lawyer. What did your attorney say is the likely outcome for this? There's not that many options. I mean, it's legal stuff. Like, what's going to happen probably with the financial? What's going to happen probably with the assets? Let's get those on the table, because that's where acceptance needs to happen. Now you get to have your feelings. You can grieve. You can feel devastated. You can feel sad. All of those things can be there and will be there and are there. And you can also have the possibility of a different life moving forward. Both can be true. I feel like people sometimes think acceptance means like I have to be okay with it.
Right.
It's not about like being okay with it. It's those feelings are there. And what do you want for the next step in your life?
Right.
It's not saying you have to say, oh yeah, that was good or that was easy. No. It could be really miserable and you get to have your life.
Right. We covered so much. And as we wrap up, I want to know from you, because we hope that people gain their confidence. They get through this process. They're getting back into the world. What are some signs that people can look for in a toxic partner, or before they get too involved? What are some signs of a toxic person?
Really good question. Again, I, for people, use the lean into how do you feel. Some signs might be somebody who's controlling. Are you feeling controlled? So turn it back to you. Are you feeling isolated? And that might not look very obvious. Is your partner supporting you in having a support network outside of them? Is your partner supporting you in having other relationships outside of your primary relationship? A big red flag is if your partner wants to be in your business all the time and doesn't want you to have any aspects of your life outside of that. Another key is blame. If you are feeling blamed a lot, and when you're blamed, are these things that you even possibly have control over? Are you blamed for somebody else's feelings or actions? That is a key one. Manipulating is another one. And this is where people get a little bit unsure. And I say, but how do you feel? Do you have that queasy feeling inside? Trust your gut. Go to your intuition. Another piece can be controlling things like the finances. And a lot of these can be a little bit hard to detect, because it could be, well, I'm doing it for you and it's in your best interest and it feels like it's really helpful. But if your gut is feeling like, I don't have enough information about this, I don't have enough say about it, it's not a conversation and a partnership, those are red flags. Usually, I've noticed people have a feeling inside, whether they can verbalize it or not, that just something doesn't feel right. And generally, another question that I ask people are, what do you need? What do you want? And are you getting that? And what I will see often in toxic relationships is one person is saying to the other person, I need to be loved. I need to be seen. And they are just not getting that from the other person. If you feel like your partner is lacking in empathy, that they're not connecting with you, which is separate from saying, I love you, you're fabulous, talking up a storm, putting you on a pedestal, that's not empathy. It's, do you feel loved and cared for in a way that is deeply meaningful to you? If your gut is saying no, there's probably something toxic going on.
And I'm going to add, when you know something is off, believe it. Don't try to explain it away or make excuses for it. And I've noticed another red flag or something to be mindful of is how one handles conflict. Do they want to talk about it? Do they not talk to you? Or what is their mode, if you will, of handling conflict? And I think that can speak volumes to how the relationship will be as well.
Yes. And on that point, I also wanted to add, if your feelings aren't being dismissed, just like you said, don't try and justify it up here. It's how you feel in here. And nobody can tell you you don't feel some way. So if you are saying, I feel da 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 da, and the other person's saying, well, no, you don't, that can't be. That's a big red flag. If your feelings aren't being heard, respected, and valued.
Wow. That is a great point to wrap it up on, Tamar. Do you want to tell everyone how they can find you if they want to use your services or anything you would like to share?
Yes, you can reach me at www.tamarjordanacoaching.com. And I'm always happy to talk to people whether they want to sign up for coaching or workshops or not. I'm always happy to talk to people and also help them figure out what might be best for them.
And I have to say, I can sit and talk to Tamar myself for hours. So she's extremely easy to talk to. And I am so, so grateful that you came on the show. So thank you for that, Tamar.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for the service that you provide.
Thank you. Now, to our listeners, remember, comprehending the nuances of divorce, especially when confronting difficult behaviors, is a significant undertaking. The insights shared today by Tamar will undoubtedly assist in alleviating some of the hardships associated with this process. A special thank you again to Tamar for joining us and providing her valuable insights. To all of our listeners, stay resilient, stay informed. Until our next episode, this is Demetria Graves signing off from Legally Uncensored. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to Legally Uncensored and follow us on all major streaming platforms to stay updated with our engaging content.